Hi everyone, my name is Faye Mum and Addict.
Hi Faye.
First of all, thank you for coming here tonight, and I hope you get something out of what I'm saying. And can you please get rid of that phone noise? Dino, thank you for inviting me to come and speak here. He actually invited me to come here a couple of months ago, but we forgot about it, and he just phoned me up last night. And to be honest with you, I'm not feeling 100%. I've been off work all week. I've had laryngitis. But because it's service and it's giving back to NA, because NA saved my life, I've, you know, taken a few paracetamols, had a coffee and just, yeah, thought I'd come and do it. So bear with me, please. I came into the room about 2.5 years ago, into the rooms, and basically I was mullered. I was injecting crystal meth nearly every single day. My flat was going to get repossessed. My family didn't know what was going on with me. You know, I had a really good life on Facebook. Everything was nice, you know, as you do, you know. And I just wanted to turn up at family functions, and no one knew what was going on. And it got to the stage where I didn't even want to use with other addicts. I just wanted to sit in my flat and use drugs, yeah. And the only thing working was the kettle, yeah. And I'd have a hit, be in my bed, and then after it run out, after about half an hour, I'd crawl back to the kitchen to put the kettle on, and this just went on in a cycle. And even if you asked me then if I thought I was an addict, I'd probably say no. My life ain't unmanageable, you know. I'm about to have my flat repossessed, nearly losing my job, you know, family, everything. My health was completely obliterated. I had complete psychosis, but no, I'm all right, I'm not an addict, because an addict's one of those, isn't he? It's not one of me. Just to go back a little bit about my history, I weren't born in this country. I was born in the country in Kashmir, Pakistan, on the border, and there was lots of stuff going on between both countries. I've had a couple of wars. It's quite a difficult place, really, and when I moved over to this country, I lived in a lovely place called Moss Side in Manchester, which, to be honest with you, was like Teletubby land compared to where I grew up. So anyway, there's a lot of things that went on in Moss Side, which your parents couldn't really, you know, protect you from, yeah, because you had to go out in the street and you see what was going on, and there was a lot of stuff going on, which I'm not sure really a child should have to see. And I was there till I was about 12, 13 years old and moved to London. So when we come over here, I couldn't really speak English. We were quite poor. You know, I had to wear my brother's hand-me-down clothes. You know, when I went to, what do you call it, secondary school, you know, you wear a blazer for 3 years. I had to wear my brother's same blazer. And I tried to style it out and tell all my friends that as I come out of the shop, the jacket fell out the back door of the car. And that's why, you know, it's dirty, even though it had a different name on the name tag as well. But yeah, you do these things, don't you, to survive. My first addiction was television. I didn't really feel like I fitted in. I've got three older brothers. They're all great academically, sports, you know. The teachers, as soon as they found out what my surname was, they put me in the team straight away. And I wasn't really even interested in some of the sports that my brothers played. So I felt a little bit different, a little bit left out. And I actually love watching television, you know what I mean? Anything from Dallas to the Waltons, to Little House on the Prairie, Grand Jewel, all of that stuff, do you know what I mean? It was like I had, you know, my imaginary life and family and everything compared to what was going on in there, and not with the reality stuff. It was a way for me to get away from life. Both my grandparents died when I was about 14. That was quite a big impact. And then I lost my mum when I was 16, and that's when the drugs started coming in. I went back home to Berea, and when I was over there, one of my cousins said, look, have some of this, it'll take the edge off things. And over there, they don't really use Rizla paper, but they might do now, but it was, they made weed in a curry. So I had this curry, and I was giggling all night, do you know what I mean? And I was thinking, yeah, I quite like this. And then I kept taking that, and then when I came back to England, you know, someone offered me LSD, and you know, we were doing things like sniffing Tippex in the school tie and stuff like that, you know, before we got into the hard stuff. And I remember taking this LSD for literally a month after I lost my mum. Every day I took one of them things, and I don't even remember what happened in that time, do you know what I mean? I really don't remember. And all I know is because I weren't happy with what's going on. My dad couldn't do the motherly thing as well and everything as well, so it was quite hard. So I didn't really know, I didn't want to tell my brothers that I was vulnerable, because they were all really strong and tough and everything, yeah? And I felt a little bit left out. So I didn't really, so all I've done is I hang around with my mates, I didn't want to be at home. And then my dad, 1 or 2 years later, he went to get remarried, and I was all over the place. My brother was at university in Bournemouth, so I decided to go to Bournemouth to get away from home, you know. And yeah, I was drinking and using drugs, experimenting with ecstasy, the whole summer of love and all that larky, MDMA and everything. I was taking everything, basically. I moved back to London. I think I had to come back at some stage. And I had an arranged marriage. It was like, I was kind of like, it was my mum's dying wishes for me to get married to this girl. So I had a lot of emotional blackmail in my head that if I don't, it's going to help to get rid of that link. So I ended up getting married to this girl. When I went back home, married her, brought her back over. And we were married for 6 years, you know. I've got a beautiful son out of it. He's 19 years old now. And the thing is, though, I always knew from when I was young that I actually like men. But the way, you know, the places that I grew up in, things that I got involved in, that was like something to be ashamed of, do you know what I mean? Yeah, and you know, I got involved in crime and stuff like that, and gangs and all the rest of it. We didn't really think of ourselves as a gang in those days. It was just what you'd done. You hung around with your boys, and if someone's up to this or someone's up to that, you get involved. And yeah, my family kind of turned their back on me. It's when she went to have another baby, I said, oh, I can't live this life. And it was really tough, actually, because people in my own family were telling me I should be stoned to death. And it was easy to just start taking more drugs, I suppose, in terms of escapism and stuff. And my straight mates, I just had to cut them off because they wouldn't understand. It's like one of them things where it's a weakness, yeah, where you want to try and make a joke at one of your boys, and they just couldn't relate, I don't think, on a mature level to it. So, and plus, I didn't want them to get the blame, because my dad's the kind of person who says, you know, if your mate goes somewhere good, you will go there as well. Yeah, so anyway, and then I came onto the gay scene, and I was like, okay, let me show these guys how to take drugs, and real drugs as well, compared to stuff they were taking. And it was just like, the drugs just took over. It was like, yeah, man, we fucking invented house music, you know, Studio 54, the rest of it. That's what we do as gay people. And I was just taking drugs and going to clubs and taking my top off in the middle of the dance floor, and yeah, it just seemed like it was the natural thing to do. And if you asked me 20 years ago, you know, would I think I'd end up being a drug addict to inject crystal meth every day, I'd probably say no. You know, I probably would have said I wanted to be a pilot or an accountant. But yeah, it just got worse and worse, and the drugs, I mean, and you know, clubbing was one thing, and then after the clubs, it was just like, I didn't want to go to the clubs anymore. I didn't want to spend money. I didn't want to, you know, be around people. I just wanted to do it on my own. And I didn't realise, first of all, I started smoking this stuff, how strong and powerful it was. I thought I could take it and leave it. And then someone introduced me to injecting, and yeah, it just got really messy after that, to be honest with you. And I started injecting anything. I remember injecting MDMA once, and I was literally shaking for 12 hours. And after I had some sleep and something to eat, and a shower, I thought, I'm all right again, let's get back on it, yeah? So about 2.5, that's just to give you a background, so about 2.5 years ago, I just thought, I think I had enough. I was really unhappy, I wanted to top myself, but I didn't have the balls to do it, pardon my French. I hated using, I'd cry, you know, after being on it for like 10 days or 11 days and not being able to sleep, I'd cry and beg God to just let me go sleep and, you know, get away from this madness. I don't want to do it anymore. But I was so hooked. And it was just messy, man. And because I sold drugs as well, And then obviously I knew people in the food chain, it was easier to get hold of. So that's what happened. And then one day I'd had enough, I called my brothers round, I pulled out one of them JD sports bags with a rope on it, and it was full of needles. And I just said to them, look, I had to shock them. I said, look, that's what I've been doing. And they said, right, you need help. So I said, you need to go rehab. So I went to a local place. They said, you've got to wait 9-10 months. They asked me, what do I do? And I said, I work on the tube. And they said, oh, well, they got really good occupational health service. So I was actually about to get sacked. And then I said to my union rep, I've got a problem with drugs. And then she negotiated for me to get into treatment. So I went to Bournemouth, back to Bournemouth. And to be honest with you, the first couple of days were really hard, this group therapy stuff. You know, the place that I come from, you don't talk about your problems, you don't share your problems. Yeah, a problem shared is a problem doubled. You know, and you know, the kind of mates that I had nicknames like Stone Cold and Aggie. Yeah, we don't talk about stuff, man, we just get on with it. Anyway, so I didn't really want to be there. So I walked out of the group therapy once, and I was literally going to jump over the gate and run to the tube station, and I ended up punching the fence. And then I got put on a contract for putting a hole in the fence. But it was because I just really didn't know. And then a couple of days after that, one of the girls started talking about her kids in group therapy, and I just broke down. I hadn't cried for such a long time. And I thought, you know what, this is me getting connected now. One other thing I forgot to mention as well, one of my best mates got murdered just a couple of years before that. So I think the drugs was even more of a trigger. It wasn't really a reason. I never think there was a reason for drugs after I went treatment, because you get soldiers coming back from Afghanistan who've got no arms and legs and don't take drugs, you know what I mean? So I was in treatment. Started doing step work. I thought I was there for 12 weeks, yet to do a step a week. And I literally got up to step 8. I was that hungry for it. Came back to London, started the steps again. Threw myself into meetings. Was shit scared because a lot of my peers relocated to Bournemouth. But obviously because of my son and my flat and my job, I couldn't leave. My son had a few problems with weed and alcohol and stuff as well. I took him to meetings, and by the grace of God, he's clean as well now. You know, Andy moved in with me. He had a few problems with his stepdad. And it's just beautiful, you know, he's at university and stuff. I've got my job back. I had to pay double my mortgage for 10 months to catch up, and I've done that. And I'm, you know, 2 years, 2.5 years clean now. And this program saved my life, man. It really, really did, you know. And all it needs is for people to engage with it, you know. I love meetings, you know. Even though I've been ill this week, I had to come here, man, because I know that's part of a bigger plan. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, you're going to get something out of my share. Okay, I've got about 2 minutes to go. So yeah, I do service, yeah. I think even if you just go to a meeting, that's service. When you listen to other people and you share back, that's all part of the service as well, and making the meeting possible. I've got a couple of commitments as well. I'm organising a convention for another fellowship in 2 weeks' time. Not sure I'm allowed to say that. But yeah, I love this stuff, man, you know, and when I started going through the steps, that's when I understood the reason why I picked up drugs, yeah, and looking at myself and realising it's not just about the addiction, it's other stuff as well, why I felt different and self-esteem was low and all the rest of it. Today, you know, if I'm scared, I can say I'm scared. If I'm having a good day or a bad day, I can talk about it. And, you know, one of the things that I learned is that if I listen to my own head, it's only, you know, it's not really, it's a one-way discussion, yeah? And normally, if you listen to 3 or 4 people, you can come up with a good solution. So today, the person who would never even share his problems is here talking to you now and is not afraid of asking for help. And none of you should be either. Everyone in this room deserves recovery, man. And you know what, there's so much in these readings as well. You know when it says, for the first time in man's history, I ain't a mathematician, man, that's about 2,000 years. We're fucking lucky to have this stuff. We expect it. Oh yeah, I'm an addict. Of course I'm going to have a meeting. You know? I heard a guy share the other day, who was 33 years clean, who's gay, said that when he went to start a gay meeting years ago, they said it's against the traditions, and it took him a couple of years to do that. But that's the journey, isn't it? Hopefully someone coming from my background will hear my story and think, you know what, I can do it as well. So yeah, it's a day at a time. Anyway, it's lovely to be here. I hope you got something from that, and cheers.
Yeah.